This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors at Oakwood Realty in Vancouver. And today we've got a fantastic episode. We have Sean Hodgins, president of Century Group. Big get for the show. We're super excited to have Sean.
Came down to the studio in Kokomo Studios. It was great
having him here. And as he mentioned, great to kind of be in person. And he's right. You know, so many podcasts right now are over Zoom. But I feel like you always get a better show.
Better connection, better conversation, that's for sure. And this is a great conversation. I mean, we talk about everything, right? We do the regular kind of questions we often ask guests.
Right.
But I feel like Sean was very, his interest, and this is kind of an interesting, you know, it just became clear that placemaking, making a place for people to live and thrive in, was so kind of paramount that we talk a lot about how you think about master plan communities. But then this idea, because they're currently planning a community and building a community out of agricultural urbanism, which is right. Something we have never, not only have we not talked about on the show, it was totally new to me.
Well, yeah, and really, it's interesting. A lot of some of the things I was thinking about is, first of all, you know, he talks about his real estate journey and kind of his how he entered into real estate, and there's so many things that can hook you in real estate, like under the umbrella of real estate. Like you can be hooked by the investment side of things, or by the market data, the economics,
building
of it,
a business,
or by you know, actually building form or structure, whatever it is, trades, anything. Right? There's so many different layers, and his very much so is being kind of brought in to the placemaker kind of community building aspect of it. And it's a far-reaching conversation. We talk about the market. We talk about where he's excited about. And we talk, of course, about some of the communities that they're building currently active in Nanaimo, Coquitlam, Tawasin,
Surrey,
and Surrey, right?
We do focus a little bit more on the Tawasin project, Southlands, because it is such an interesting concept. Yeah, I left really kind of thinking a lot about some of the future of community building and like
where it could go.
Yeah, where it could go. It was really exciting. Really exciting having Sean on the show.
And we talk a little bit about it, but this idea, of course, we talk about a lot about agricultural urbanism today, but this idea also of, which we should say, Sean's not a huge fan of that term, and maybe it's not the best term talk about, but he kind of keeps referring back to building community almost around food.
Well, yeah, that it's a touchstone, right? Eating with people.
It's how you would build community in a lot of ways, right? So it's super fascinating in that regard. But also, you know, we've talked so many times over the years about like anchor coffee shops and stuff like that, creating community. But this is further reaching. And I think for a place like BC or a place like Vancouver, this is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, and almost more literally, and it's not a play on words here, but more organic in kind of ground up community creation. So stay tuned for that. Before we get to that, Adam, Jaden Lee was on the show about a month ago. He is running from BC Children's Hospital to Chilliwack on October 6th at 3 p.m. This is his last checkup to get his all clear after 5 years cancer-free. He's trying to raise $150,000 for BC Children's Hospital, where he spent a great deal of his time as a teenager. He is running 100 miles. If you want to learn more, of course, listen to the episode. But you can always go to our Instagram. We have a post that's pinned with more information about how to donate, either run alongside him, which he'd love, or which you're doing, or donate money. And you can also find out more information at his Instagram, _ Jaden Lee. That's JAYDENLEE. Or in our weekly mailer, the live wire, we have a button to donate.
Yeah, and I should have said this last week, but I forgot. We will send you out a shirt. If you do a donation of 20 or more, we will send you a shirt. So just send us a screenshot of your donation and your address and the size you want, keeping in mind they fit a little snug, or at least that's what Matt tells himself, and we will get you out a shirt. And mail it out.
Absolutely.
And some conditions apply.
And last, no conditions. I'd say even if you...
I'm thinking specifically of some of the European shirts we've...
Yeah. The true story. We have sent shirts to Germany.
All over.
But yeah, and last but not least, Adam, of course, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We have our most downloaded document ever in the history of the show. It is called The Sold Plan. You go on VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, you hit sell with us or help with selling. It's an immediate download. Remind the listeners, what does SOLD stand for?
SOLD is an acronym for Start on Launch Date, which means you pick when you want to launch the listing, and it gives you instructions on how to get your listing ready for the market from that day forward, what you should be doing in the time leading up to the launch date. And it's a document that we basically is a guideline that we've created over, you know, almost 15 years of selling hundreds of homes in the Lower Mainland. This is getting your place ready to sell quickly for top dollar.
It's simple steps.
It's not rocket science, but neither is real estate, right? So it just comes down to preparing, not cutting corners, and making sure that you're ready to have the best outcome.
And like I said, most downloaded, realtors downloading it, people that want to work with us downloading it, people that are curious downloading it. There's no reason why you shouldn't have this document. It's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. But Adam, maybe we should cut to our talk with Sean Hodgins, president of Century Group.
Absolutely. Enjoy. This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly 4 decades. Marcon is not only committed to high quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one-beds to three-beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's Soenhaus. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Sean Hodgins. He is the president of Century Group. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time today.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for the interest.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming down, Sean. Maybe for our listeners, I think everybody will have heard of Century Group, but can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. And Century Group is not to be confused with Century 21, as often I seem to have, but...
no gold jackets.
So Century Group was founded in 1957 by my father, who was an Irish immigrant from Metro Vancouver, and he was involved in real estate in West Vancouver and saw the opportunity when the George Massey Tunnel was being constructed and got involved in real estate investment in south of the tunnel in Delta in that time period. And that was the genesis of our company. And myself, I've lived most of my years out in South Delta. I live in Tawasin now, and like many 20-somethings at the time, I lived in Vancouver and got together with my wife, but then we moved back out to Tawasin 20 years ago now, and live there now.
Oh, And was your father entrepreneurial by nature? Or like, I'm guessing a lot of people didn't quite, maybe they saw the opportunity, but they didn't seize the opportunity.
He was entrepreneurial, and to the extent we can sort lore from fact, he told us he sold aluminum pots door to door as one of his first jobs. So I would call that quite entrepreneurial, and got involved in real estate, and got involved in many related businesses, but mostly stayed true to core in real estate.
And I'm just thinking, so he immigrated to Metro Vancouver in the 50s?
In 1949.
Okay, because it's just, I just think often, like we've talked with, the Bozos strike me as one of the groups, but people in here, a lot of the immigrants in the 50s seem to get into home building and are kind of the main players now. It seems like all immigrants, those guys were from Italy, but yes, all immigrants with that kind of immigrant hustle and seeing the opportunity is just, I guess, another case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because often when it's a family business, the kids either go one direction, which is the complete opposite, or they follow suit. Why real estate for you?
I remember that my father had some really difficult times in real estate when I was growing up. So that would have been the 1970s, and never seemed to be a really happy guy around business. And I never thought I would get involved in the business. And I started working in construction. I left and went to school for a bit. I joined the Army Reserves for a couple years while I was going to school. And I never thought that I would get involved in the business per se. And then I heard that the lead in to getting involved in it was I'd heard that we had installed a computer system, and everyone was really having problems with this computer system. And this was in the late 1980s. And I said, and I had dabbled a little bit in computers, and I thought, well, what's happening here? So I went into the office and I just started opening up these user manuals and started crawling in the crawl space of our office and trying to figure this thing out. The next thing I know, I became the computer administrator. and then it just went from there. It's just funny. And now we have systems I can't even tell you how they work. And that's how detached I've become from the computer systems in our.
But you, just so I understand, you literally got back into the kind of the family business at Century Group because you were like, I can help with, like, I know how to work.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
From IT to president of the company.
Yes. Yes. It's a very strange path. And I saw, and I just became very interested in what we were doing. And I remember at one of the things that got me very interested at about this time, which was the early 1990s. And I had started to become a little bit involved in some of the project-related stuff. And we went from, and I won't give you all the background because it'll consume too much time, but we went from owning a very small percentage of this project in Calgary. We went from owning 3% to 33%. We owned a third, and just kind of overnight, my father had done some sort of a deal to acquire a larger share of this enterprise. And so it's like, well, let's go out there and have a look at this thing. So we went out to Calgary, and I really was struck by the complexity of it. It was a large project. It was over 2,000 homes, and it had a golf course, and it touted its Highway 1 interchange, which was very interesting. And what struck me and really got me interested in this sort of concept of placemaking was that, and I won't name the project because I think it was a very nice project for Calgary and what it was about, but it struck me how this was a place that had sidewalks, but there was no place to walk to. And it was full of two-car garages, and that dominated the architectural style. The one sort of central, if you will, amenity was a golf course clubhouse. And I remember visiting some of the latest homes, and you could look across the fairway and see this clubhouse. And this is where, you know, you could come for dinner as one of the aspects of community life there. But I mean, it was probably less than 100 meters away across the fairway, but you couldn't walk to it. You basically had almost, you know, it was, you had to get into your car to get there. And I remember that really hit me as being, knowing what I knew a little bit of getting interested in urban planning, that this was wrong. And, you know, it led to a very tough conversation with my father and, and his then management team about we should be doing much different projects in this. And so that was sort of a bit of my history of getting involved in the company and really understanding kind of where I didn't want to go and that we needed to take it into a different direction.
It almost sounds like Palm Desert or something.
Yeah, it wasn't a gated community, right. To its credit. It was very auto oriented for sure.
Is in terms of the, because one thing about your story that's pretty interesting is didn't look like a lot of fun, started on the computer side, then you see placemaking as like, okay, what is this community? Is that, what is it? How is it going to be used and lived in, I guess, by the residents? Is that kind of the thing that really got you jazzed up about real estate? Because I'm just thinking like, absolutely, there's markets, business,
yeah,
urban planning, master planned communities and how they work. That's what got you going.
Yeah, the whole concept of how you live, really live. What is it to live and experience a community and get to know your neighbors and your neighbors' kids? You know, that became a factor as I had my own kids. You know, the sense of connection that you have with people, which I think more and more, I would say, we're missing more and more these days, our sense of connection. And it's really great to actually be in the studio here with you guys, just to actually, you know, meet you in person. And but I think so often on our online world, you know, that's we continue to gravitate away from a sense of connection from each other. And I think that's what a community is, and designing, you know, community needs communal space. And I think that's what defines a community is the thoughtful introduction of proper communal space. That's what interests me as much as anything.
And just because we're going to talk about what you guys are doing out in Tawasin, but does Century Group, like, do you find that you're more interested in master planned kind of larger parcels where you can kind of get at that? Or are you looking for kind of areas where that already exists and you can kind of be involved in, you know, just adding a piece?
Absolutely. If we can find a fabric of a community and tie into that, that's even better. We're involved out in Surrey right now and are working on a 3-acre parcel right now called Century City, which is somewhat vaingloriously branded, but that is trying to contribute to the modern sense of the city center in Surrey, and it's transit oriented. But you can do master planning, if you will. That's a 3-acre site, and it's very much thoughtfully. The four towers there are very thoughtfully planned. How that will create a sense of community there, but also part of the larger community that Surrey is trying to create.
Mm-hmm.
And geographically, does Century Group focus in mostly in the Lower Mainland then?
Yes, somewhat in Nanaimo. We're ramping up a project probably next year in Nanaimo, but almost, other than that, almost exclusively now in Metro Vancouver, yes.
Can we, maybe shifting gears a little bit, how's the market and have you been surprised by 2023?
Well, I haven't been surprised in the sense that the real estate market has responded to the interest rate rise. I mean, it's gone up, since March of 2022, we've seen the Bank of Canada rate go from 0.25 to now, is it now 5%? You know, so it's gone up 4.75%. and the impact on people's ability to borrow money and real estate. And really only about 40% of that impact has been felt in terms of mortgage renewals out there in the market. And so there's another very big penny to drop, or a collection of pennies that will happen in the next several months as more mortgages come due. But it has had, so in that sense, I've not been surprised that the market has definitely dampened. There's still a very robust undercurrent of real estate. I mean, I think, you know, I always reflect that people are always changing up their lives. They're changing jobs. They're getting divorced. They're getting married. So there's always going to be a market for people wanting to move houses, to upsize, to downsize. But the robustness of the market has definitely taken a big damper. But you know, we are in this lucky place in Metro Vancouver of being on the Pacific Rim in really, I think, the best country in the world. And with our liberal democracy and our natural beauty and so many things we have going for us. So this is really an international city for real estate. So in that sense, that's what's really supporting our market as much as anything.
You know, one thing that struck me was you mentioned in the 70s, your old man seemed like he wasn't enjoying the business. And I guess some people would talk about the inflation of the 70s and the, you know, trying to get it under control. And I guess I'm just thinking, does this moment remind you of in the market? Does it remind you of another moment that you've kind of operated in?
No, I'm much less concerned about. I mean, I'm 56, so I haven't. I've certainly seen the ups and downs of a couple cycles in my life, but I am much less concerned about where the real estate market is going right now. I think because Metro Vancouver is such a different city, and with immigration and the strength of the diversified economy we have. So I'm not worried about the real estate market in the long run at all.
Hmm. Just thinking about some of the areas that you're excited about in the province. So you mentioned Nanaimo, that you're doing some stuff there. Where in the Lower Mainland? So outside of maybe Surrey, so you've got projects in Tsawwassen.
Yes.
Where else geographically are you excited about right now, or do you see opportunities?
Well, right now we are in the throes of doing a plan for a significant project in Coquitlam and in Maillardville, and I'm really excited about that. It's very early days, and we're just in the start of consulting with the community there and about what is possible, and that is one example that I'm familiar with. So it's Surrey, Coquitlam, Delta right now, and Nanaimo is where we're focused.
And is Nanaimo, is that it's a residential project?
Yes. And we're trying to do a little bit of mixed use there, but we own quite a bit of land over there. But it's just such a all-consuming business that, you know, we did some housing there in 2016 and kind of got through it fairly well, and then kind of wiped our brow, and then we were turning our attention back to Delta, and we really have to, we've really acknowledged that, you know, when we start to do a master plan or roll something, you know, you really have to have someone just constantly working on it.
And right.
So we're trying to ramp up there for the long term in Nanaimo.
Hey, when you mention the upcoming projects, I mean, the question, I guess, is what is when you're acquiring the land, what does a deal look like? But maybe putting it another way, what about those areas were you excited about? Is it like, it sounds like the kind of transit oriented nature of the Surrey project, the Century City, like in Coquitlam, is there a kind of undercurrent in the types of sites you guys are looking for?
Well, you know, you touched on it in that, you know, to be able to tie into a pattern that's already there, if you will. And so, you know, with Maillardville, it's just, it seems it's a well-established community with that really is looking for change. And I think that, you know, we are a change agent. And I think the excitement around that in Maillardville for me. It will have to withstand the test of how much change do the residents want. But Surrey was really about as much the political leadership at the time when we started acquiring land there, and you know the real change of Surrey to really become. I mean, if you look at Surrey City Centre, it is the second sort of downtown core that's designated in Metro Vancouver's. I mean, there's lots of town centres, but in terms of, and I'm trying to remember the exact designation, but it's downtown Vancouver and Surrey City Centre are the two cores that are being created. And so we've built, this will be our third transit-oriented project in Surrey. We've built at the Gateway SkyTrain, the City Centre SkyTrain, and now the King George SkyTrain.
And a lot of people, it's interesting right now thinking about Surrey, because there's people that are saying, you know, 1,100 a square foot, you know, how did Surrey get here so quickly? And then there's a lot of people that seem to be saying Surrey's got a very long runway ahead of it. What are your thoughts on Surrey?
My thoughts on Surrey, quite frankly, are I'm concerned that a lot of you've seen a lot of very good development companies come in there. And I think you've also seen a lot of upstart companies that have also come in there because of the land. You know, they can buy in at a certain land price. And it's a tricky business. And I'm a little concerned that the staying power of some of those companies that I wish them all well. But there's some, you know, right now it's, if you're holding land and you're paying, say, 7% interest rate or probably even higher trying to hold that property and you don't have the depth, you know, that's a difficult proposition. So, but I would say in the long term, that aside, yes, Surrey is going to be, it is. By definition, it is going to be our second downtown.
Right.
And I believe very strongly that it will succeed. I think what Surrey is trying to do right now, which, you know, we've had to, we're in the process of redesigning Century City. We had one of the four buildings, we had one office tower, and we're changing that up to rental because we just, they're in the time period we need to act, we don't see the office market changing significantly. So that's the one area I would say that probably universally in Metro Vancouver, if you're owning and trying to develop office, it's really a dead end right now.
Right. We've been talking all morning about Tawson because we were pretty excited about this project. So can we talk a little bit about Southlands and maybe if you could provide us with an overview of Southlands?
Sure. So we had owned the Southlands. It was at one point over 750 acres of land. And as a point of interest, in 1995, when YVR, the airport, the runway was twinned, the main runway was twinned, the province acquired 220 acres from us. And dedicated it to Metro Vancouver to create the substantial Boundary Bay Regional Park. It was sort of compensatory land for the runway. And that was a great thing for us to do at the time because at that point we were holding this large parcel we had acquired out of bankruptcy. And then, so the modern day Southlands that was approved 10 years ago was really became about 530 some odd acres. And Southlands really boiled down to, I would say, in large part, an agricultural plan. The issue of preserving Southlands as an agricultural parcel and nothing but agriculture became sort of a rallying cry for some of the people in the community. And that was, it had, the reason we had acquired it out of bankruptcy was because of the previous owner. They were trying to develop it from center to circumference, basically in homes, and people didn't want that. And so, you know, we really worked with the community on, okay, well, if agriculture really is important, and I was trying to determine whether that was just the anti-growth.
I was going to say the form that NIMBYism took.
But I think some people were sincere. I think we've seen agricultural land loss, and I think people will get a sense of loss when really good agricultural land is consumed for sprawl.
Right.
I mean, certainly we didn't want that. It was really against the antithesis that I had described to you, and mm-hmm. I was trying to find a solution. And so we said, okay, well, if agriculture is important, then what is it that could be, what is its modern iteration in this community? And so we really thought that through, and that forms a part of the plan in terms of, and in the end, we dedicated out of that 530 some odd acres, we dedicated 430 acres of the land went to Delta. Most of it is agricultural land, and together with $9 million, because there were some improvements that we needed to fund. So that was drainage and irrigation, you know, getting rid of water when you don't want it and keeping water there when you did, you know, that's a big part of agriculture. My mother's side of the family were all farmers in Delta. So I had a little bit of insight. I don't want to overplay that, but I certainly understood sort of some of the realities of what makes a farm work or not work. So there was that. So Southland's, and I don't know if I'm covering quite the stuff you want, but certainly trying to understand, you know, what if agriculture is important, then what does that look like for this community? And, you know, agriculture throughout most of Canada is becoming bigger, more consolidated, larger farming operations. And we all appreciate it's also becoming smaller. It's going in two directions, mm-hmm. the intimate level of local agriculture. And so that's what we wanted to focus on. And so there's plenty of conventional agriculture. There's corn and potatoes being grown on about 250 acres of it. But we kept, we actually leased back 50 acres of the land we dedicated to Delta, and we curate the kind of farming that we want to see for our market square. And so that's a big part of the plan for Southlands.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
So it actually, because, you know, one thing that we wanted to get to was this idea of agricultural urbanism,
yes.
Right? Which seems like it's an interesting talking about that project in the 90s in Calgary, which was almost like the just sprawl and, you know, sidewalks to nowhere type thing. Whereas this seems much, much more in line with the types of communities that people are excited about in Vancouver. But agricultural urbanism is something that was new to us, right? So did you look elsewhere? Are you guys breaking new ground here?
It is a thing. And, you know, a lot of what I've done, and I'll just touch on it there's a couple of communities that I have visited that I think are try to get at this. So Burlington, Vermont has an interesting project. It's a community project, so it's not associated directly with a real estate project, but it's called the Intervale, and it's a community agricultural, sort of like a, I don't know if it's a collective is the right word, but it is a large agricultural and natural area piece on the outskirts of Burlington, Vermont. And they have different farm operations, and it's peculiar or particular to how agriculture, you know, they don't have an ALR per se, but they have conservation covenants on agricultural land. And I think the important thing for me was, you know, going into the actual town of Burlington, which is a university town. Mm-hmm. I think Bernie Sanders is there, so it gives you an idea of kind of the mindset of the community. But the restaurants say, you know, these tomatoes come from the Intervale, and I think, you know, so how the identity of the Intervale informed the culture of food in Burlington, Vermont. That was something very cool for, you know, that I learned from that, and something that I would really like to take Southlands eventually. I also saw there's a very interesting community called Serenby outside of Atlanta that is, I've been there a few times. My brother-in-law lives in Atlanta, so it's another great excuse for my wife and I to go down there. But started by a restaurateur named Steve Nygren, and he created Serenby. And at heart, it was really about trying to inform a community around food and agriculture. Now, they've kind of moved more towards the wellness theme than in part because I saw the farm and the soil looks brutal. I mean, it really is. You know, we've got great soil in comparison.
At the pivot.
yeah, but they still have a community farm. They have a weekly farm market. And they have restaurants that are really part of the community. And I think those were some of the watermarks that I was inspired by. And I think so much of what we do in real estate and in architecture and planning is, you know, you look for precedents, you look for things that people have done well, and you say, and try to learn from them. And I would say those are a couple of projects that I learned from that inspired me. So I think hopefully that answers a little
totally
bit of
yeah,
the question.
100%. But is it, and one thing I'm just thinking of here is that part of it is that you're trying to figure out how can we, you know, not, and maybe it isn't even possible to bulldoze what the community wants. You want to work within the community, and there's this agricultural piece. But then there's a sustainability aspect to this. There's at least where, you know, I live by Trout Lake, where the farmer's market, everybody goes to the, like, right. Farmer's market it's a great community. Yeah. So there's like that kind of component. And then even around what you're talking about in Vermont, like creating community almost around food and agricultural seems like it all seems to mesh together really, really well. Like it seems like a really, really smart idea.
And when we talk about it often on the show, it's developers are using the retail space, like restaurants that people will use or grocery stores or coffee shops that are trendy in the area. So this is kind of it's a fairly novel approach, and you probably have to need a master plan community to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been really challenging to get the agriculture off the ground or out of the ground, if you will. We're now working with Snow Farms, or an organic farm group that are in Delta right now. And so they're doing our farm piece for us. We're working with them. And we're growing some hops. They're growing some hops in anticipation that our brewery will be using those. But I wanted to, yeah, because there's really three aspects to sort of round out that concept. So the agricultural piece, the urbanism part, and I'm not a huge fan of the agricultural urbanism, but it works for now. Mm-hmm. It's the term I guess we can refer to, but the idea that, you know, because Southlands is really three things. I talked about It's at heart, there's an agricultural plan. There's also a open space or public space plan. The most notable aspect being our market square. And then there's the urban and architectural component of that, and how, and all of those three things work together. This is the, if I can call it the art of Southlands that we're trying to get at, is trying to make those three things work together. And I think it is working. It's been challenging to work through those details of how they work. But so, for instance, the market square opens up into the agricultural, like it's a traditional or conventional market square in an urban setting would be surrounded by homes or shops, ideally on the ground floor of where some apartments are, and that's your more typical market square that you might see in a town. We open it up on one side out to the agricultural piece because that's the connection that we want to create. We didn't want to isolate the agricultural land. We wanted to bring it into the community. And, you know, one of the things we talked about during the planning is the farmers out there that are out in those fields, they want a good cup of coffee as much as anyone. So welcome them in, make them part of.
Yeah, not such a separation of space, right?
Right. And so make that agricultural land and those people working out there, make them part of the community as much as possible. And of course, the market square exists because it eventually will be surrounded by the shops and homes that really define it on at least three of its sides. So that's the part that's unfolding right now.
Wow. And so if I'm an end user, somebody moving to the community, so some of the things that I can expect in this community over other communities is, I'm guessing, locally grown produce. Can you talk a little bit about, like, what for the end user or for the purchaser, what do they get?
Well, they get a variety of really cool homes that were... Right.
And they're kind of Scandinavian style.
Yes,
They're really great looking.
And
we were talking about, we have a good friend of ours who has a place in Point Roberts that kind of overlooks Tawson. And so we've got a very good panoramic kind of view of,
right,
of the project. And it's colorful, it's modern, it's beautiful, beautiful design.
Thank you. Yeah. So it's generally you would refer to it as sort of neo-traditional. So a very modern take on traditional architecture. And very much we've tried to take some cues from Scandinavian architecture, because when we did our original design charrette, we found those cues, actually a lot of them in Point Roberts. We toured around Point Roberts, and there's a lot of Scandinavian influence from some of the earlier settlers to Delta and Point Roberts. So, and to your question as it relates to, there's various sort of layers that people can experience. So we have every other week, we have a farmer's market. We decided to better to do a really good farmer's market every other week. That's sort of the level that we're at right now. And a lot of the homes themselves, we've accommodated, try to do sort of local sort of shared garden stuff right within the projects themselves. The really unexpected thing for us has been our community allotment gardens, and this is in the market square, and I don't even know what we rent them out for, really kind of a nominal fee, but that sense of togetherness that people get by coming, I live right adjacent, and I walk my dog over there at night, and it's really cool to see people coming there. They actually just wander over with their glass of wine and water there. They're probably, strictly speaking, not allowed, but I would dare anyone to tell them that they can't have a glass of wine at the community allotment gardens. And they're watering their and they got their dogs with them and you know, gossiping about stuff and talking about whose tomatoes are the best, you know? And so I think the food part, so much of what food is that we've, and not to sound too airy-fairy about it, but I think that, you know, food is the commonality between people. And you know, we've made it really, you know, part of our corporate mission statement about, you know, placemaking around food.
Right.
Like that's it's such a cool way. It is the best way that people come together. Whether it's growing food or sharing a meal together, that's really and that's the jazz for me.
Yeah. To me, yeah. Well, to me it feels very Blue Zone in that way of like it takes all these things that we get excited about, like the city that you is so accessible, but then it marries it almost with like more of like a Mediterranean style existence where you have fresh food and people are it seems like it kind of it creates community in a different way.
I think so. I think so.
And by the sounds of things so far, like it's interesting or it's exciting to hear that people are using the space in kind of the intended way, right? Like it's like if you build it, they will come. They're using the space the way you imagined. Glass of wine, talking about tomatoes with a glass of wine.
It might be as much about the wine as anything, but yeah. And we are actually have a backlog of people. We're trying to actually build more community allotment gardens. So I think that's sort of one of the ways. And you know, I think, you know, people are getting their groceries up at the grocery store. Of course they are. It's just it's an aspect or a layer of community life. And, you know, it's not the only thing, but it's a thing that, you know, we've been really trying to work on and make it work for people. And, you know, we've got multi-use pathways. We've got so many things going on for us that people can really connect to when they live there. But that's a big part of it. And, you know, the retail piece, that's sort of the next layer as we build some more of our buildings around the market square. We're trying to work on the you know, curate sort of food-based retail. Mm-hmm. And as we always say, so we've got Four Winds. We're opening a brewery and restaurant, and you know, beer is a food. We're very excited by that. That'll be open in spring of 2024.
How did that? Because Four Winds, I think, is one of the best breweries in the region. What how did that collab happen?
That happened because our project manager Brad Semke was at their tasting room, which is now in Tilbury, right where their brewery is, and started talking to them and said, you know, this, would you guys like to build something out in Southlands? And we've been working with the Mills family, who owns Four Winds Brewing, and so we custom built a space for them. We're trying to turn that over to them in this fall, so that they can do their fit out for their brewery and restaurant. But it was really just, you know, as so many things happen in life, it was just, hey, this seems like a good idea. Yeah. Let's give it a try.
But it also, and just as a well, not a final thought, just a last thing I was thinking about this is, when you hear about, you know, master plan communities, it's often, you know, you don't have to leave. Like this is, it's got everything that you will need. This almost seems that way, but it's also like the way you're talking about it, it sounds like a destination. Like I actually am like, this seems like a cool place to go on to go to the market and have a drink. And, you know, like it almost seems like more so than a lot of other master plan communities, a destination.
I hope so. I think we're just about there, where there's enough for people to do. I mean, right now we have a little pop-up business. So we're right next to Boundary Bay Regional Park, and great paddle boarding, great kayaking there. So we've got a pop-up paddle board and a shop that's opened up for the summer. We have people who, on their bikes, they come, you know, over 100 kilometers, they come on these bike rides and bike out to Tawasin. And we have a car club that comes out there. And certainly on our market days, it's quite a destination for us. And combined with the park too. I mean, it's the second most visited regional park after Pacific Spirit is Boundary Bay Regional Park.
And just, I'm just thinking about, because you were saying you want to kind of curate some of the retail experiences. Have you thought, like restaurants, like I'm guessing it would be a lot of kind of like farm to table type restaurants that you'd be going after?
Yeah, we're talking to a couple groups right now to try to get something going on the restaurant front. And we have Prado Cafe there now as our only food offering until Four Winds opens up in the spring. We're working hard on getting a good restaurant out there right now.
And sales are ongoing currently?
They are. We are selling, we've got a couple cottages left. So we essentially, you can think of them as single family homes, but they're a little smaller. So, you know, I like branding them as cottages because they have a cottage feel to them. And we're selling, I mean, I can talk about pricing if you want, but we're selling at cottages. The granary is being sold.
And those are townhomes?
Those are flats, one bedroom flats that are about 650 square foot. And then stacked townhomes above that, which are about, I think those are about 1,100 square foot, two bedroom, two bath. And that's part of that, the granary where the Four Winds will be. And we have a number of other projects coming up under, a lot of them are under construction right now. And so I don't like pre-selling off paper. I really prefer to at least get the project going. So we've got some row homes, some fee simple row homes, which will be quite interesting, and townhomes and more cottages. And we have a type of project called the courtyard cottage, which again, it's another idea that we borrowed, which is from an architect named Ross Chapin. And he calls it the pocket neighborhood, but we've built one thus far, but it's bare land strata with a shared sort of green space courtyard. And as picking up on that food and theme, the one that we built has a shared pizza oven, for instance. So that's with a long table and a little outside fireplace. And so that's kind of some of the ways we're thinking about food, is like how do people come together around food and cooking food? You know, that's a really big part of the human experience.
Right. And the cottages are fully detached. Are they?
They are.
They are.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And in kind of like roughly maybe starting price points for some of the
products? 1.75 million for the cottages. They're 2,200 square feet. The flats that we're selling, oh boy, I should memorize this. I have notes somewhere, but I think those are about 690,000, somewhere around there. So they're a little over $1,100 a square foot.
Okay.
And the stacked townhomes, which are about 1,100 square foot, I think those are about 900 to 950,000. So around $900 a square foot.
Just out of curiosity, has there been an overwhelming group of a certain type of buyer? Like, are you seeing downsizers? Are you seeing first time home buyers, or is it a range of people?
Well, I would say, you know, we've had sort of a mix of some of the locals that are downsizing, and we've had, keep in mind, we've only got about 175 sales thus far. It's still early days, maybe 200 now. But about 100 of those have been local, and about 100 of those have been kind of metro, mostly, you know, Vancouver, Richmond, Burnaby. And a lot of those have connections to the community, parents living out there. So there was a profile about the project in the Vancouver Sun, and they profiled one of the buyers, and he was from Vancouver, a young couple in their 30s with a couple young kids. And so I happened to be walking down the street, and I recognized, and I said, you're one of our buyers, and, you know, hello, I introduced myself. And he goes, well, yeah. And I moved from Vancouver, but I actually grew up out here, and I'm, you know, we wanted to be a little closer for our, you know, the parents. And so that was a, so a lot of people have connections out to South Delta, but we've had people come from Winnipeg. We've got some people, they bought sight unseen, and they've got one of the people has a job that they've landed out here. So they're coming out to take over their home, and some very interesting stories of people.
So you won't be the only Jets fan, Matt. All right. Well, we do have this segment called the Five Wire, Sean. Can you stick around for that? Five quick questions?
Absolutely.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Okay, so question number one is one book that you have read recently that you would recommend for our listeners.
Oh boy. Well, I actually reread it, and that was, say, is 2 years ago. Okay.
That works.
I reread The Power Broker by Robert Caro.
Okay.
And
that's a big book.
It is a big book, and it's the story of a last name is Moses, and I'm trying to remember what
Robert Moses.
And his influence on the development of New York and its park system on Long Island, and eventually its transportation network, and a very interesting story of hubris. Yeah. And urban planning.
Right. Almost, in my understanding of it, is in a lot of ways the antithesis of what you're trying to create in some ways.
Well, yeah. Robert Moses started off trying to do good and developing parks for out in Long Island for the masses in New York City, and got a lot of power, and it went to his head. And that's a cautionary tale, I would say. I strongly recommend that book if you have got the time to do some serious commitment to reading.
I was thinking, I was trying to find it in my Audible, but the
I have it as an audiobook, actually.
The other one, the other New York developer book, I was trying to remember. I'll bring it up for the outro, but it's a good one.
I've got tons of books I could recommend. Most of them are historical, but history books, but yeah.
Excellent.
Fantastic. In the last few years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life, Sean?
I would say a recommitment to fitness and running, and that has probably been, my wife and I we don't often run together or do fitness together, but we might go hiking. But I think my wife has always been super fit, and I'm trying to catch up with her. But I would say that is the biggest thing for me.
Does your Army Reserve days,
not, yeah, I don't want to overplay that. I wasn't a very good soldier, I can tell you that.
The push-ups
but fitness, I'd say a recommitment to fitness in the past few years has been really important to
me. That's a great one.
Yeah.
What have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
Binge watching or a movie. Oh boy, that's a tough one. I can tell you the last thing I watched, which was on Netflix, was about the 2015 earthquake in Nepal. And it was a very interesting. It was a 3-part.
Where the Israeli travelers? Yes. Oh my God, that was
That was a very interesting. I like nonfiction when I can, and I thought that was very interesting to me. I had no idea how the devastation that had happened in Kathmandu. And I think the the devastation up on the for the climbers was right. just a small piece
right.
of really what happened.
Yeah, there. Just this whole
yeah
the how everything got destroyed. Favorite band or music?
I'm not much of a I just listen to whatever other people's podcasts are.
Yeah.
Oh boy. I didn't prepare for this. I didn't. I'm going to take a pass on that.
All right. Taking a pass on music. Last but not least, something that you have purchased for under $1,500 recently that's had a positive impact on your life.
Oh boy. Something under $1,500 that has impacted my life.
Yeah. We do under $1,500. So Matt and I might be able to afford it.
You know, the only thing that really comes to mind is my iPhone. Is
that's
that
a good one? As a positive, I don't know about a positive impact, but an impact.
You know, I would say that. I mean, there's very few things that in terms of a thing, a tangible thing. I have my Danner boots that I bought 30 years ago, a chainsaw that I bought 28 years ago. And, those are the only two historical things I know that I've got that I still own. And then I would say my iterations of iPhones, but yeah. with the, you know, I can't think of anything.
Well, iPhone technology is eclipsing chainsaw technology. So that's, no, that's, I mean, you know, it's funny. We, like, obviously, you use your phone for absolutely everything, and we've never had that as an answer.
AirPods come up quite a bit,
your phone is everything. iPhone's
almost so obvious, impactful and obvious that it's like something nobody thinks about.
Yeah, I try to respect it as a absolutely incredible piece of technology that the communication and information that you can get and the systems. I mean, it's revolutionized. You know, everything is on the cloud now.
Yeah.
Our project management mm-hmm. is on the cloud. I can look at the status of our projects. Just I pick up the phone and I can get information. I think it's that insight into the software development that's happened on
right.
for us. It's that just the information that I have access to that I never had before. I wish it was more, I had a more interesting or creative one, but.
That comes full circle as the IT guy at Century Group.
Again, that was a long time ago.
The IT guy.
So Sean, how can people find out more about what you're doing over at Century Group and more about Drainery and Southlands? I think it's a definitely in all the years we've been doing this is a very unique project. So I think people will want to know where they can find out more.
Well, they can go on our website, centurygroup.ca, and they can also go on discoversouthlands.ca. And those are our two websites. You can come out I'd encourage people to come out to Southlands and, you know, just take a couple hours and wander out there and come into our Discovery Center and meet our sales staff and, you know, but come for a farmer's market. I believe there's a link to the Grange Center of Farming and Food. So that's the institution that we created to actually activate the farm component. And so they have the farmer's market schedule there. And I should, again, know it offhand, but it's every other Saturday.
Is Four Winds open yet?
No. Four Winds will be open. I believe we're targeting June 1st
of
2024 is when Four Winds will be open and
worth the trip.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Thanks so much for coming down to the studio, Sean. It was great meeting you and having you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me and thanks for your interest.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Sean Hodgins, president of Century Group.
Really enjoyed that conversation. Really enjoyed having Sean in the studio. Interesting guy, like across the board, and really thoughtful, bit of a refreshing take on real estate in general. And definitely a guy that it's almost like his
his moral urban compass is leading his real estate journey.
You know what? It's I said this, and this is not in contrast to anyone else we've ever had on the show, but I think it goes back to what you were saying in the introduction. Like, we've had people that came to be a developer through the trades. We've had people that were accountants, right? We've had people from all walks of life. It's like there's so many avenues into real estate investing, real estate development, and all the rest. But Sean and Lenny Moy strike me as Lenny Moy from Aragon, who was on the show Sure. not long ago. Both of them have such a unique kind of take on why they're doing it, whether they explicitly state it or not. It just comes through in where the conversation goes and because of what they're interested in. And Sean is a perfect example of that. Like, that Southlands project sounds so forward thinking in a way that is very unique and is not necessarily, doesn't have the same metrics in place as to why they're doing it.
And he's clearly so invested in it in a way, like, you know, he's down there talking to people, walking his dog in the area
right.
and getting feedback. I would even take that a step further and say that what's been astounding for me over the years is I think there's like a perception of the development community or the building community sometimes of people that are not so invested in their work, but looking, you know, this is
maximized profit,
maximizing profit or whatever. The one thing, you know, after almost a decade of doing this show is that some of the most thoughtful people I think I've ever met are often in the development community, and they're driven by something that is a way bigger. And of course, right? Because I mean, if you're, like, imagine you were only driven by making money in any job, right? I mean, that might keep you going for a year or two. But if you're not passionate about something, a broader, you know, leaving your mark on a skyline or building a spectacular quality or design or something, right, or building community, why else would you do it?
Exactly. Right? So no, there's too much risk.
Maybe it's too not much a work. Surprise.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This was a great conversation that I think illustrated that for sure. But so hopefully everybody enjoyed. But Adam, before we go, we should say, last but not least, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all real estate related things live. We have things like the Livewire. This is our weekly mailer where you get deal of the month stats, access to the back catalog. We have the Sold Plan, start on launch date. This is for getting your place ready for selling. You hit sell with us or help with selling. It's an immediate download. And of course, we have tried and true Private Client Services.
Yeah, Matt, because if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. Get sold prices, days on market, basically realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is a thing that you want set up. It's basically listings management software, I should say, where you're basically monitoring what's coming on the market, and it's giving you really, really exceptional real estate level data.
And they keep on
improving it.
Exactly, so
it keeps getting better. But the nice thing for me, the two things that I like is you get notifications when there's a new listing based on your parameters, and your parameters can actually be very specific, which is really nice. And then when something shows up as sold, it shows you in real time what it sold for. So I love that because, you know, you don't have to feel like, as often people don't like reaching out asking for sold prices, and it's all there. And it gives you a better sense of what's happening in the market. Is stuff selling over asking? Is stuff selling under asking? What's the spread and how quickly are things moving, right?
So absolutely.
If you're like a data-driven person, you'll love PCS.
Absolutely. If you want to talk about that or anything else, give me a shout at any time, 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we have that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week. Hope you really enjoyed that conversation with Sean Hodgins, and we're back next week with another great episode.
Have a good week.
2,000 spaces for radio. Subscribe today.